when you church plant, you rethink your faith. Because now when you go and you pastor a church, you already have a group of people who are committed. And so you try to reach new people, but you are kind of there with the people who are already there. When you are in a church plant, you have nobody.
What do you think about the leaders that stay away from AI? What do you think? What would you say to them?
I think they need to educate themselves a little bit of what AI is.
What would you say to somebody that's just stepping into ministry?
Don't be afraid that your ideas are too crazy. My dad was a pastor. I grew up in a pastor's home, which I'm very blessed with. But he was very nice always. He would say, hey, I don't want you to believe because I believe. I want you to kind of think through it, you know. Does faith make sense? Why would you believe if... But also, don't just deny God because other people do. Think about it, you know. Again, does it make sense to deny God, to live, you know, with a kind of a godless life?
What helped you decide through that?
Yeah, for me, it was the evidence.
Welcome back to another episode of Ministry Reimagined. Or if this is your first time watching, welcome. We dive deeper into people's perspectives and their stories and the heart behind their ministry. This episode, we dove deeper into Pastor Boyan's perspective and how he views the differences between pastors and church planters, his experiences church planting, and the role that technology has played and is continuing to play in the work that he's doing. Hello.
Hello. Good to be with you.
I'm so glad. I'm so excited. This is my uncle, Chicho Boyan, we call him. Chicho is the version of uncle in Bulgaria.
Yeah, and we're just talking how I was just telling her, call me Boyan, but it feels uncomfortable, so right? Wrong. I do the same with people who are much older than me.
It feels very wrong to call someone by their name.
But. Yeah, but whatever you call me, you know, people will know it's one or the other.
What names are you used to? You're used to Pastor Boyan.
So I go by Boyan only. Boyan. I don't give my last name because it's very, you know, left thereof. It's very hard to pronounce. Yeah. So there are not very many Boyans.
Yeah.
So if you say Pastor Boyan, a lot of times that creates an issue because in documents, like the previous conference I worked at, they will actually put that as my last name. And it's, you know, totally different than my license and everything else. So I have to clarify it, but... Yeah, Pastor Boyan is Pastor what they Boyan. Go with. Yeah.
Well, I know a lot about you, but the other people don't. How would you introduce yourself to somebody that you're just meeting?
For first time?
Yeah.
By the way, really glad to be doing this with you.
I'm
glad.
Cool
to see what you guys are, you know, kind of how your lives are developing and see you do a lot of more of this type of interviews where, you know, you learn about different topics, different people and so on. How would I introduce myself? I grew up in a communist country. I spent the first 19 years of my life there in a very atheistic society and, you know, grew up as a Christian in a non-Christian environment, which created some challenges. But I enjoyed every moment of it. I love my childhood. I have lots of Christian and non-Christian friends. As I grew up, of course, maybe because I grew up in that type of an environment, faith was a really big thing for my life. And I had kind of promised God that if I have a chance to learn more about him, study theology, go into like a Christian university and be able to study more Bible and theology, I would kind of dedicate my life to that, even though I had a lot of other interests. And so that's how my life developed. I was able to come to U.S., study here, and I've basically dedicated my life to God. As far as myself, I mean, I have, like I said, so many different areas of interest. I love sports, soccer in particular, which probably would have been something I would have gone into if, you know, I didn't have...
To be a professional soccer player?
I would have loved to, yeah. I just played as a goalie. So I love that, like most of, you know, boys and that grew up in our country, we all want to be like stars, you know. It's another story if we could have made it, but, you know, we think we were good enough for that. But I also like racing. I like watching Formula One in particular, racing go-karts with my son. I love art. I'm an artist as well, which is something that,
What type of art?
Just fine arts. I love pencil drawing in particular and enjoy it. Don't do as much of it as I want to, but as far as something else about me, you know, I'm married, of course, have two kids, my daughter Natalia, which are your cousins, and Timothy, they're both grown up in college now. Lived in something else interesting. I moved here from Bulgaria. I've lived in all over US, which is more than a lot of people who have grown up here have done.
Yeah.
Lived in Washington State, California, Colorado, Wyoming, Michigan, Texas, and now Maryland. So I've kind That's of experienced crazy. A little bit.
Over a span of how many years?
I came when I was 19 and now I'm 50. So wow. It's been 31 years. Yeah.
That's crazy. But a lot of people spend those 31 years in the same state that they grew
absolutely.
Up in.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember we had a neighbor in Colorado, actually, that said, I've never traveled outside of the state.
Wow.
And I was like, what do you mean? You know, I can't get settled in one state.
Yeah, yeah.
So but it's been fun. To me, what's been interesting is to observe how people relate to life in all these different places. There are subcultures, even within the same country. And just to see the lifestyle, the way people approach life, the way they view, different issues has been really enriching.
Is there a main difference between each of those states?
So I wouldn't say states, but areas. I mean, I'll give you my kind of prejudiced opinion, okay? Coming from Europe, I love Europe. I love the lifestyle. We go out a lot. We spend time in cafes. There is a lot more social interaction. Yeah. Of course, there is public transportation. We live a lot closer together. Coming here to US, life seemed a lot more isolated. Mm. So when I went to the first place, kind of my American home in Spokane, Washington, I felt like, why are these people living out in the woods, you know? I had no appreciation for country living. And I was like, what am I? This was America. I thought everything is going to be like New York, Chicago, LA, you know, skyscrapers. And Spokane, Washington first didn't have hardly any skyscrapers. In fact, there are no skyscrapers there.
Yeah.
And then we lived, my friend's house was about 25 minutes away from the city out in the woods. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I'm going to die here. we still laugh about it.
Yeah.
Because that became my American home, and I still call his parents like my American mom and dad. I'm like kind of my foster home.
Yeah.
But what I noticed is on the West Coast, people work very hard, like everywhere in US, but they take time to relax. So lawyers, doctors, construction workers, doesn't matter what you do, the weekend comes and we're out on the boats and, you know, with friends, hiking, skiing, whatever. The farther east you move, the more busy life becomes.
Mm.
So here, life is also, people work a lot, but I don't find them taking as much time off, you know, where to enjoy life.
Yeah.
The Midwest is a different kind of place because the West Coast people are very friendly, but there is more community, I found. The Midwest is a lot more isolated. People kind of live more for each other, but they're very nice. I know there are these labels where, well, you know, people live for themselves, don't bother me, you know, they have their guns, whatever. But I found them to be very friendly, but still they live their life. And as long as you don't interfere with them, life is good, you know. So those are kind of the interesting, the way people approach life. The other big thing, customer service, moving from the West, very nice. Midwest is nice. You know, people are very friendly. You get great services. You move to the East Coast, and it's totally like Europe. People seem to be more rude, direct. I mean, we say rude. They're more direct. But I really feel like I'm getting the European customer service where customers doesn't matter as much. If I own the store, it's my business. That's another interesting kind of...
So you feel at home in the East Coast.
I do, but I miss the...
Yeah.
I like the Midwest. I love Texas just because of the weather, I think. I grew up with snow and cold weather, and it's been interesting to experience that.
I bet, yeah. So many different... In the same country, so many different things.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
So.
So I think we should get personal.
Okay.
As the banner behind you says.
All right.
I'm thinking about when you were still in Bulgaria in like your early years of your life, how was there ever a time where you felt like maybe ministry or like where you struggled in your faith? Was there ever a time where you didn't want to go into ministry?
My desire to go into ministry came towards the kind of the when I was 17, 18, kind of 2-3 years before I journeyed out west to study. theology and ministry. Before that, there were a lot of hard moments, just because I remember, in fact, I was talking with someone about this just like a couple of days ago at the Bible study we had together. We were talking mm-hmm. on Bible, we had Bible conversations, and I was telling them it was interesting because when you grow up with best friends that you have, and when I say best friends, I mean people who I can call them right now, some of them, and I still can, mm-hmm. you know, ask them for anything and they'll do it for me. But people who don't believe in God, people who have grown up in a society where to believe in God was funny, was for the stupid, mm-hmm. because that's what the communists used to say. You know, the Bible is a bunch of myths. You're believing in fairy tales. It gets on you, especially when you're a third, fourth grade kid. And so my dad was a pastor. I grew up in a pastor's home, which I'm very blessed with. But he was very nice always. He would say, hey, I don't want you to believe because I believe. I want mm-hmm. you to kind of think through it, you know. Does faith make sense? Why would you believe if... But also, don't just deny God mm-hmm. because other people do. Think about it, you know. Again, does it make sense to deny God, to live, you know, with a kind of a godless life? And so probably the biggest struggles for me have been reflecting on, does it make sense? Is God a fairy tale? Mm-hmm. You know, especially when, again, you grow up day after day in an environment where you're constantly told, well, science is everything. We came through evolution. Anything else is just a made-up stuff to control the people. Religion mm-hmm. is there to control the masses, the whole idea of, you know, the communist philosophy. And so I had to, from early age, I had to try to read and, you know, think and reflect and talk. I had friends who are, until today, they don't believe in God. Mm-hmm. And we've had conversations where I've had to tell them why I see that believing in God makes more sense than living without faith. But to them, it doesn't make sense, okay? So, my biggest struggle was that. Considering, is there a God? Does it make sense for me to believe in him? And am I stupid, really? Mm. Or am I really making a choice that makes sense considering the evidence around me? The rest of it, really, I mean, a lot of times you talk to people who have grown up in environments where they've been persecuted for their mm-hmm. faith. And yes, there was that as well. But when you believe in something, what I realized, no one can take it away from you. Mm. People can kill you, but they cannot take your freedom away. You submit you kind of surrender your freedom because you are afraid. So from that perspective, you know, I've never felt like threatened in Bulgaria during my childhood, but it was hard to make up my mind and decide what mm-hmm. am I really here for, deciding on my purpose, on my beginning and so on. I don't know if that...
Yeah, what helped you decide through that? How did you find that out for yourself?
Yeah, for me, it was the evidence. I'm a very logical guy, so I think through things. To me, experience means a lot, but rationality, things need to make sense. Mm-hmm. So the first thing for me was just considering how probable was it really that we came out of nothing? I mean, you know, just this very, very, of course, simple, logical mm-hmm. illustration, if I want to call it, is if you find a piece of pottery in the ground, you're digging in the backyard, you don't say, wow, you know, how did this form over millions of years? You say, man, you know, where did this come from? Mm-hmm. How did it break? You know, someone, you see that there was a rational, intelligent touch there, mm-hmm. you know? So I love astronomy. That's another thing that I forgot to mention. I really like cosmology, astronomy, or like reading about it and studying about it, looking at the universe. Mm. To me, it's like it's so complex, and there's so many laws there that keep everything together. That it makes more sense to believe that there is a rational beginning. An irrational God who started, or if you want to call them a God, a rational being who designed all this, then mm-hmm. it just came, you know, to be out of, you know, simple chance. That was the initial part. Then afterwards, of course, the big part of it was we studied evolution. The whole idea that, yes, we talk about changing from one one species to another. Mm-hmm. You know, there is this development. I don't see the evidence. Okay. Everything, every time I look around, I hear the theory behind, but I don't see the in-between, you know, mm-hmm. Species. And of course, I mean, we talk about millions of years, but it still doesn't make sense, just rationally. And finally, you know, to me, the last thing that made me choose to believe in God was my personal experience with him, but also realizing that the kind of the Pascal wager, one of the great philosophers who, you know, I'm going to paraphrase, basically said, well, I have two choices, you know, to finish life, live life without God and finish, you know, as an mm-hmm. unbeliever, or live life with God and finish as a believer. What have I lost and what have I gained in either case? And if you believe in God, you have a 50% chance, if God is real, to have life after, mm-hmm. you know, you die. And in the other case, you are guaranteed to have nothing when you die. So I'm an optimist. I choose to live my life with God. Even just from the standpoint of probability, it makes more sense to have a 50% chance to, you know,
wow.
have something beyond this life.
Yeah, that's really good. I think that's really cool how the more that you learn and the more that you research and learn about cosmology
and
astronomy,
yeah.
the more that you learn about it and the more that you research, the more everything for you points to a creator.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. I'm wondering, from that belief that you've, you know, found for yourself and you've researched and you've decided that you're going to believe, what made you want to work in it? And to work in ministry and to expand?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting question, because I've wondered myself. It wasn't like a one point where I just heard, okay, you should go and be a mm-hmm. pastor. But probably the biggest factor that influenced my desire to dedicate my life to working for God was seeing what happened with the lives of some of my friends who were non-believers. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's very easy to lose sight of what you live for and give up on life when you have no hope. There is no real purpose beyond this life. I have friends who are extremely intelligent and ended up being like drunkards and, you know, I mean, basically ruined their life when they could have been geniuses. They could have been inventors. They could have, I studied with them. I know I used to even feel with some of them, man, you're a genius. I wish I was able to intellectually absorb knowledge the way you do, you know, because we are different people, yeah. especially one of my friends who had photographic memory. I was like, man, this is so cool. I mean, we will joke about it. We'll open a textbook and he'll look, you know, and then you like shut it down after 3-4 seconds and he can almost recite everything.
Oh,
I mean, so seeing how some of my friends just ended up doing nothing with their lives, because communism, even after communism, it was very hard to really succeed, start a business, do something, mm-hmm. You know, great with your life, made me very sad. Mm-hmm. And I try to encourage them, even without, you know, talking about faith, just for them to have something to live for. And then, of course, seeing other friends of mine, how even if they chose to have a good life and a kind of, you know, achieve something with their lives, they still had kind of no purpose. Mm-hmm. I mean, when life is over, it's like, you know, it's pointless still. Everything seems pointless. So I felt like, man, what I have is something that I feel is so valuable that I would rather dedicate my life to that, to help people at least give God a chance, mm-hmm. Then just let them kind of die in their discouragement and disparity. And I know that's, of course, is from my perspective as a believer. Mm-hmm. You know, some people might say, well, you know, you're chasing a cause that, you know, is irrelevant to anyone else, but you believe in, and that's why you're pushing it. Mm. Whatever the case, I would rather share what I have found in God, including the personal experiences with others, and encourage them to give him a try, than just to say, well, I have what I have, you do whatever you want to do, you know, and let's see what happens mm-hmm. at the end. So it's my passion for people that I know. And from there, of course, I developed my passion for unchurched young adults, mm-hmm. people who don't have faith, especially in the formative years of their life. And even though I'm 50, my passion is still that, to ask the questions, to help young adults and young people think about these questions, and and how that could transform again their outlook of life. And so that's what made me decide to journey into, you know, committing my life to just God and sharing the good news about faith in Jesus. So
that's good, because you're not just a regular pastor in a church that already exists. You're a church planter.
Yeah.
What's the difference with that? What drew you to that?
So church planting is for pastors who get bored to just like, you know, babysit the church. Well, no. It's I mean, pastoring is more than that. Okay. I like business. So if I wasn't a church planter, as much as I like art and all the other stuff, I would probably just be doing business. I like entrepreneurship. I like starting new things. I'm a visionary, you know. So I found outside of the reasons why we church plants, which we can get into, I mean, why we should church plant, why is it very biblical and very important thing to do. To me, it brings a kind of combines both, where I can start a church, which is in a way a business, you know, an organization. I love organizational development, leadership, strategic planning, and so on. So it allows me to stay faithful to kind of what I feel I've been called to do in life, to, you know, reach people with the message of Jesus, but in the same time, help create these new entities, these new spaces, these new communities of faith where people can connect with Jesus. So that the difference is that you don't have a church, you have to start your own church. Or in other cases, you have a church, but you say, hey, I'm going to start one more entity in a nearby town where, let's say, there is no church present, or you feel that the churches there have become irrelevant. So you want to bring something that's fresh. The other big thing about church planting is that when you church plant, you rethink your faith. Because now when you go and you pastor a church, you already have a group of people who are committed. And so you try to reach new people, but you're kind of there with the people who are already there. When you are in a church plant, you have nobody. So you start, you know, getting few people who are as excited as you are. You have a core team of 10, then you grow it to 20, 30 people. But then from then on is we need to reach out and help people connect with that message of Jesus in order for the church to grow. And that makes you ask the questions, well, just reciting the same things I used to recite in my church doesn't work. They don't make sense to people. So why am I believing? You start asking yourself the question, how do I explain that to somebody who is new? To who doesn't have that experience, and just keeps faith more real for me. So that's kind of a why, and I mean, what the difference is, and why I've chosen to do it.
That's really cool, because I think when a lot of people hear that someone's a pastor, no one ever thinks about the business side, or that you can even have a business side or an entrepreneur. You can be an entrepreneur while being a pastor. So I think that's really cool.
I mean, most good pastors, you'll find out they have another side to them. Some of them like counseling, you know, because you do a lot of work with interpersonal relationships and helping people in, you know, in difficult situations, or helping them through life coaching and relationship coaching. Other people have like business kind of interest. Other people could be, you know, like you can have medical, you can have studied, let's say, to be a doctor and still find the church environment be a place where you can incorporate some of that stuff. I have friends of mine who've been lawyers and are now pastors, which bring another kind of side to the church. I mean, you can be anything. Pastoring is not a profession. It's a calling. So you use all of your other gifts together with your biblical knowledge to impact people, and you can do it in so many different ways. So,
is there a story that you have that you've really seen the difference in a community that you've church planted?
Probably. I mean, the best church plant, I've done 3 church plants. I have friends who have done a lot more. I'm working on the 4th one now, but probably the Crosswalk in Texas, the last church that I started before we moved to Maryland. Just to see how God took people who were so comfortable in their churches out into on this journey where you are pressure to not just be someone sitting on the church pew, you know, and check in, you mm-hmm. know, on the weekend that you've been to church, but you are forced to really rethink your faith and relate it to those around you, become more aware of how do you share your personal experience with God, with others, seeing that in the core team of people about, you know, we started with 16 people there. And today it's, you know, it's a church with over 200 people with its own building and all that. To me, the story was to see, I don't know if I can verbalize it, to see the transformation of someone who has taken God for granted to now become like an apostle, a missionary for him, a disciple mm-hmm. maker. In other words, how do I take my faith and really share it with you, and I can help you walk along to find Jesus. Mm-hmm. This is on the church side. Of course, seeing lives of people who have just joined the church, who have found hope again. Probably the best story for me wasn't from a church plant, but was in Wyoming. There was a gentleman who had a motorcycle accident mm. and was a professional guy, but had given up on life because of it, got into drugs and all that. And I remember just sharing, walking him through the Bible and what God can do for him, and seeing him just get out of his depression mm. and becoming, you know, active with life again. And how God transformed his life was one of the best experiences I've seen. So, and at that time I was a very young pastor. I had worked only for 3 years. Didn't have some of the knowledge I've acquired over the years now. And so it was God, you know, yeah. just someone letting God give them hope and transform their life and get off drugs without me taking them through any, you know, recovery mm-hmm. programs and all that. You see the power of God in such strong ways that you're just saying, man, you know, I believe in God even more because I see how powerful he is to transform yeah. the lives of others.
Yeah. A couple questions ago, earlier on, you mm-hmm. said something about how...
Or pastors babysit churches.
Yeah, it okay. was something like that. What do you think you're doing different from the traditional pastor that you think more people should do?
Okay. Talking about pastors in particular, mm-hmm. The tendency I have seen working as a pastor, seeing a lot of my colleagues, is that pastors come very excited, especially when you're young. You come so excited to the job, to the ministry, and you want to change the world, and you have all these ideas. But when you go to a church, the church expects you to visit, to preach, to take care of the business of the church, mm-hmm. be sure that everything is paid, everyone gets along, and you become literally like a, I don't want to call it a babysitter, but that's the tendency. You become what we call in biblical terms a shepherd. Mm-hmm. You're there to comfort people, be with them, which is a huge part of ministry. Mm-hmm. But I believe that when I look at the Bible, the role of the leaders, of the pastors, of the apostles, which I associate more with pastors, is not to care for the church as much, but is to help reach new unreached areas and people. And so that has impacted what I would call my philosophy of ministry has become. I'm not here to preach and give Bible study and visit and comfort, okay, even though I do that and I love it. Mm-hmm. I love people, I love visiting and all that. I always do that in my ministry. My job is to create a community, empower people and equip them to do that for themselves, so I can take a few other people that are like me, passionate about reaching a new place, and move on to a new place. Or empower them to move on and reach out new community of believers. Because otherwise I feel, at least because of my calling and my gift set, I feel I'm wasting my time if I just sit and do something for people that I believe they can do for themselves. Mm-hmm. In fact, biblically, if you look at the role of the leader, like Paul, Peter, you know, the apostles, they were not there to do the pastoral work, the pastoral care work. Mm-hmm. They were there to preach, equip and train, and then let the elders of the church, that's where the whole idea of elders of the church comes in, even, you know, and I'm not going to get into the biblical terminology and all that. But literally the elders were the ones who will take care of the church, while the pastors and the apostles would continue the mission to spread the gospel. Paul will organize a church, then he will set leaders, and then they'll go. There is a very interesting story in Acts 13, when the church in Antioch was established, and it was about in existence about a few years. And at one point, it says that the elders were praying, and the Holy Spirit came and said, "Take Paul and Barnabas, who are their their pastors, take them and send them out now to new places to like start church, new communities of faith, while the elders take care of the church." So when the Holy Spirit came, when God came to these elders and to that church, he said, no, don't send the people you don't like, or, just pick two people and send them out, but keep Paul. You take your best leaders, your best, your pastor, basically, and your best leader, and you send them out, and you say, we'll be okay, you go start another church, So this is my philosophy of ministry. I'm not starting even Renewal right now, which is on my shirt, right? I'm not starting Renewal just to start a church for myself, even if it grows to, if God blesses, it grows in whatever, hundreds, thousands of people. I'm there to start it, create a team of people who can really take care of it, and start organizing a new team so we can go to another city and start another church. So my role is more a role of an apostle, of someone who is there to keep multiplying the ministry of the church through leadership multiplication and so on, than to just visit people, give Bible studies and so on. There are a lot of people who can give Bible studies better than me. Mm-hmm. There are people who can counsel better than me. They're professional counselors in my congregation, why am I doing things like I'm the only one who can do that when I have so many other people who are capable? And it also teaches the church, when you take that approach, to that they are not there just to listen to me, they're not dependent on me, but they're there to be active. The church is a body of believers. Everyone has a gift. They are all more involved when I'm not the person doing everything, So, and it's hard, I have to say. I mean, we tend a lot of people at church, and I would be the same way probably. They like having someone else do the organizational stuff. So we just go in, listen to a sermon, then go home. But that's not the church that God intended and Jesus intended when he initiated the whole Christian movement, I believe. And so, I believe in short, I believe in leadership development. When you multiply leaders, you have a lot more people who use their gifts to be involved in church. And you have the ability then, when you have enough leaders in the church, to take some of them and then multiply, go to new places. You can start 3-4 church plants if you have enough leaders developed. So,
well, yeah, I think that's really cool and really rare to see a lot of even just people in ministry, because a lot of them can think, oh, well, God gave me this gift, so I'm going to be the person to do all this stuff. But you're see from the perspective of use the people around you, and that you're not the perfect person for it.
So there is a good book that transformed the way I think about ministry, even though it was it aligned itself with what I believed. It's called Hero Maker, written by Dave Ferguson, and there is another one of the other guys that works with him. But it had a statement in there that really made me think a lot about this, that the job of a leader is not to create another leader, okay? But to create a leader maker, all right? So I can empower you to be a leader, and I can say, wow, I want Celeste to be a great leader. But if I do that, I've done disservice to you. Because then you think like you are everything, right?
Yeah.
If I can install the mentality in my leaders, the leaders around me and in myself, that I'm here to develop other leaders, then that creates a movement among the church. You move from a entity to a movement that Jesus created. What did Jesus do? He chose the disciples, but he told them, go make other disciples. And I wish that word would be even translated differently. Go and make other disciple makers. Mm. Because it's not just let me share Jesus. Now you gotta go and you gotta share Jesus with others, you know. So it's always this multiplication idea that I find so strong in the Bible.
That's really cool. I think, well, first let's give you a plug on Renewal Church. Where they find you if they're...
So renewalchurchdc.org is the website. That's probably the best place because at the moment we're homeless looking for a home. Part of it is because we are still worshiping at the school building, and during the summer they take, this year they decided to do remodel for 5 weeks. So we kind of found yourself having to do outdoor church and all that. But we are also looking for a new place. And the main idea behind what we are trying to build with this new church plant is we are trying to grow a church out of a center of influence, or what we call urban centers of influence. We are creating a space where, literally, we think of it as a space that's going to become a hub for building a community. It's going to have a cafe in it where, you know, we can attract and interact with people. It will have we have some people who are very gifted with technology. There is going to be like a tech space, environment where people can learn and grow in the knowledge of coding and developer, you know, help people, young people who want to become developers, gain that knowledge as well. Part of it is because of our community. You know, we are planting a church in an area of DC, northwest DC, where Rockville, Gaithersburg, and North Bethesda, that's called the tech corridor of DC. A lot of the tech and biotech companies and government offices are there. But the idea of the space we're trying to build is not to be a space where we have worship once a week, like, you know, a lot of churches kind of have created the image of, but a space where things are happening all the time. You can come and you can get, you know, health coaching and be a part of a group that meets within that space that, you know, works on preventative health, or, you know, you can be a part of a group that loves outdoor, you know, sports, or, you know, hiking or outdoor activities. You can be a part of we have a book club, not a Bible group, but a group that just reads books and talks about them. I would love for us, once we have the space, to develop like an art group where you go, you get together. Right now we do it, but every 3 months because of space restrictions. So it's a community where life happens, and in that environment, we can share with each other the benefit of walking with Jesus and what does that mean. And people who don't know Jesus can not only find a kind of an environment where they can satisfy their everyday needs of life, but can also find an environment where they can learn more about how they can grow spiritually closer to God. This is the vision behind it, but you know, it requires the right space, requires a little bit of fundraising, which we're doing now. But we're excited. We're hoping that by the end of this year, we'll be up and running fully, or at least, you know, be at a more permanent space. And as far as like what people can see there, that I hope people can experience, is an environment where you can have open conversations about faith, where you don't have to worry about how people will perceive you if you say certain opinions or if you express different opinion, or you challenge some of the Bible doctrines or the beliefs, you know, that other people might have. It's a place where we all can openly talk about God, about issues, about questions, help each other grow, and together find ourselves back, our way back to our Creator God. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I think it's really cool how it's not, because church has just been known for, and when people think of church, they just think of, oh, it's a place where I go once a week and that's it.
Yeah, and I mean, even our worship service is designed to not be a lecture or just a sermon that people sit down and listen to, but be a lot more interactive. And I have to admit, it was hard to transition from pastoring for years in a place where you have your sermon and everyone sits and listens or sleeps, whatever, But to a way to of doing worship where you let people interrupt you, ask questions and stuff. Because again, I mean, it interrupts your mm-hmm. train of thought and all that, but it creates a lot more relevant experience for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's still a lot of things to learn, but our focus is professional young adults. We want to really not only do church for them, but we want them to come and help design the worship mm-hmm. experience. So it's still a project in motion. Mm-hmm. Being designed as we go. And we hope again that it will be a place where people would love to come, because it's mm-hmm. not what we've done for them, but it's something that it's a community that we're building together. They're a part of. So I'm excited. We'll see. Maybe in 6-8 months we can talk and see how things have gone with
Very
that.
Very true. Yeah. Very true. Well, if you guys are in the Rockville or DC area,
Northern DC area, just look up renewalchurchdc.org.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Would love to have you. Yeah.
You said something about technology, which I think is also, from my perspective, very rare from pastors and people in ministry to be talking about technology.
Yeah.
How do you view it in the aspect of ministry? Do you think those two should be something separate, or can they help each other?
Oh, they can absolutely help each other. I mean, I have found that any area outside of not just ministry but theology, you know, could enhance the experience of the church experience, but technology in particular, because it provides first, it helps a lot. I mean, let's take communication. I remember growing up when we got our first wired phone, and we were not one of the first to have it because it was expensive in Bulgaria, but how cool it was to call somebody, you know, when the phone rang, it was like a celebration for me, you know, when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Now we have the phones in our hands. Then I remember my first mobile phone when I was in Colorado, mm-hmm. you know, this is 97, 98, and how cool it was, you know, I was one of the cool people with a cell phone because mm-hmm. I was traveling, and now we have our whole lives there. And it's a real blessing because we can communicate, we can stay in touch, things get done a lot easier. And mm-hmm. of course, I mean, I'm talking when you use it in a healthy way, because technology can also bring some addictions as well and challenge us affect us negatively in mm-hmm. our productivity if we don't manage it well. But it's like every innovation that comes in life. You have to learn how to use it properly. I believe that the church for a long time has been shying away from technology because we feel like, oh, there is a lot of bad things that come. That happened initially with TV. When video came, we're like, oh, this is of the devil, right? Mm. You know, you read some of the older articles and stuff about the media. Oh, you know, this is horrible. You look at all the bad stuff. Well, you know, how about we use it for good? I mean, God created us to be visual people. So I look at today's technology the same way, not as a threat, but how can we learn to use it for in an effective way for ministry? And the other big thing about technology that I've been challenged, and your dad has been a part of that as well, because he's into, like, he's a developer, he's a kind of what I call tech guy. And there are a lot of other tech people that I have interacted with. I think the church, so each one of these segments in our society, like the artsy people, the more people who love philosophy, okay, more of the I guess everyone could be an outdoors person, but let's take the tech people. There is a particular way of thinking. There is a particular mm-hmm. way that each one of these groups views life, and my desire is, with technology and everything else, is to create that space. Mm-hmm. Where those type of people can connect with each other and with God, and see how we can facilitate an environment that will, you know, sometimes we try to have everyone connect to God in the same way. And I believe that there needs to be a lot more segmentation within the church community. So this is where, when I talk about renewal, I talk about it as being a space. Okay. In fact, our life center is going to be called Renewal Life Space, not a center, because we want it to be a space where different communities can exist. Mm-hmm. We create the space where people can come connect with God and with each other, you know, and find renewal our motto is to help people find renewal for their life, relationships, and faith. So we want to create those spaces where, you know, people can do that. And the technology, I guess I look at it more creating a space where tech people can connect, but also creating help. We want to have that group of people, of tech people, help us. And I'm talking people who are not as, I mean, I'm relatively tech savvy, but I wouldn't call myself a tech guy, right? I would like to establish like a conversation between these groups where I can ask my questions and say, hey, you know, let's say AI, okay? How do we engage it in a healthy way? Here are my concerns, you know, here is what doesn't make sense to me. And have some of the people who are more familiar with how the whole AI environment works and its possibilities talk back to me and say, well, you know, here are ideas, you know, don't be afraid of it. Here is how you can use it. Here is how you can protect yourself. You know, so I just see that technology can open and is opening a lot of doors. But if you don't know how to use it right, you can get in real trouble. So I want to not only incorporate technology, but I want to have a group of people who are very tech savvy and understand it better to interact with people like me and help me how my life could become better in a healthier and more positive way with it. I don't know if that makes sense.
But, yeah. I think it's interesting because when you talk about AI, I've had a lot of conversations with ministry leaders that are scared and shy away from AI because they don't want, they think it takes away the personality of it and it makes it a lot less personal. How do you view that?
I mean, it could, okay? If you just go, it could become a crutch, an unhealthy crutch, okay? I'll give you an example. I can go and just say, hey, ChatGPT, write me a sermon on forgiveness, okay? And then I go, I look through it, and I say, okay, let me go preach it, okay? Pretty soon, people will start feeling that because my heart is not into it. If you know, kind of knowing how a sermon is developed, so if you use it wrong, you can just write a message. Well, write an email. Well, you read it, and it AI is. I'll never forget the first time I got exposed to AI. The guy who was presenting said this that has stuck with me. AI is like a really, really intelligent administrative assistant you got. They graduated top of their class, but they have no experiential knowledge. They have all this, knowledge that they acquired, book knowledge, because AI has access to all this information, but they don't know how to apply it. So treat them as a very intelligent person, but also as a person who doesn't have the experience. So you'll have to teach them, train them, help them use that knowledge into like effective ways. So, I'm not scared of it. What I'm scared of is for myself and others is to misuse it, to make us lazy, because that kills creativity. Whatever I personally believe, and I know we've had those conversations with your dad and a few other of my, friends who are big into, they understand technology a lot better than me and AI better than me, but I have a hard time believing that AI could really become as creative as a human being, okay? Because human beings can have this spontaneous creativity. I don't have to know anything about lighting all of a sudden to see a new way of using light, you know? I look at AI, again, from my understanding, more like analyzing and coming up with new ways. As a person, I believe can get a creative idea just like that out of the blue. It's like this light bulb that goes in. Don't know if AI could ever get there, and that's a whole nother topic. But I want us to keep our creativity because that's what makes life beautiful. I'm a visionary. I like creating. I believe that's what really makes life interesting. But AI can help us along the way in many ways. I mean, it can do a lot of the daily routine stuff that right now an administrative assistant is doing. It can have, to me, one of the best things is learning how to have conversations with AI. And I know it sounds crazy, but say, hey, here is what I'm thinking, you know, here is the idea I've developed, here is my sermon, thoughts and outline and all that. If you're a young adult, okay, let's ask ChatGPT, think as a young adult, what are some things I'm not thinking about? What are questions I'm not asking? Learning how to use, you know, some of the AI stuff that way for me mm-hmm. is very powerful. For other people who are in different, you know, life occupations, of course, the application of it will be different. But I believe that AI could become very, very, it can take place of the that debate partner or a creative member or whatever member that I don't have on my leadership team, yeah. you know, can be generated artificially. And based on that can help us make better decisions because it has access to analyzing a lot more data, mm-hmm. demographic data. And anyway, so.
Yeah. What do you think about the leaders that stay away from AI? What do you think? What would you say to them if you could?
I don't want to sound like I'm putting them down, but I think they need to educate themselves a little bit of what AI is. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are a lot of dangerous paths that AI could take, no question. And a lot of the, you know, the kind of the forefathers of AI and the people who developed it talk about it. There's so many resources online that you can find to hear about the dangers of it. But just educate yourself, learn mm-hmm. more about the possibilities of it. And more than that, find someone who understands it that can help you learn how to use it effectively, and you'll find it extremely, extremely helpful, even for simple things mm-hmm. like writing a, I want to send, let's say, just a social media post to mm-hmm. the whole church. I can put just few ideas there and have it crafted, and then I go back, I look through it. It saves so much time. And I don't look at it as being lazy because it's the same thing as if I have, let's say you write something and you say, mm-hmm. hey, would you just edit it for me? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it can become an editor for, there are a lot of ways that you can use it. And I'm sure that there are ways that I can't even think of yet of what AI could become and how it can benefit me. But we have to use it. I mean, I remember getting a calculator mm-hmm. when I was growing up and my mom said, you can't use it because you will not learn how to you know, add. And so I had to learn to add it and subtract. I think there is a point of us growing in knowledge, but I also don't think that I should, once I know how to calculate, instead of taking 10 minutes to solve an equation, I can plug it in and then take that and use it for the application I need it for. Mm-hmm. I mean, and to me, the other side of AI that probably, you know, someone like your dad will laugh about, but to me, it's the interactive part. And I keep talking about this. I would love for our church, because again, of the tech focus that we want to have in creating this space for tech people that mm-hmm. they can connect not only with each other, but brainstorm of how they can take technology and impact the world around them. I would like for us to have like AI present to interact with kids, young people, instead of them playing, games on their phone. How about having a Bible conversation with an AI, you know, artificial intelligence person there, character mm-hmm. that's created? Maybe having sermons where we can all ask AI to interact with us, not because we can't do it with people, but because it kind of arouses curiosity of people mm. and creates interaction that every new mm-hmm. tool can create. So I think it will be cool. Imagine walking into church and being able to have a conversation on anything with an AI that you know you can't offend, you know, and you can just ask, you know, just... Uh-huh. Play with it. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
I think your calculator analogy is really mm-hmm. interesting because I think everybody should learn how to add and subtract. That's like a basic human skill. But also the calculator lets you take the time that you would normally take doing those basic equations to help you do a bigger equation and something that can just take you so much further, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and so the drawback of that side, I mean, of the calculator, and I don't know if I mentioned that, is that you might rely on it so much that when it's not present, You can't. You don't know how much money I need to give you back in the store, or do you have, you know, simple. So I think it's the same thing with using AI. You have to know how to write. If you're going to expect AI to write for you and you don't know how to, you know, literally write, I mean, it's it to me, that's a tragedy. Okay. There's some, if you, same thing with phones. I know a lot of young people, they love communicating through nonverbal methods like text, social media, and so on. I think there is something, and I've done that sometimes just for the fun of it. I'll ask everyone to leave their phones, and we are forced to just be there, be present, you know, no outside contact, even with some of my leaders in my previous church plant, because there is a need to learn to interact. The normal social interaction will not develop unless we force ourselves to be there. Once you have it,
you
know, technology can become a lot more helpful into that.
That's good. When you look back in, you know, your time in ministry and even before ministry, just your time when you were younger, what would you say to somebody that's just stepping into ministry? What's something that, like, you wish you knew?
Probably don't be afraid that your ideas are too crazy. Okay. Don't think that something is impossible. And the second important thing to me is don't look at ministry as a job. Because if you approach it as a job, you'll have a very hard time and you will make a lot of mistakes, because you will be forced to live your life as a pastor based on what other people want you want to make that, that pastoral job description to be, rather than what you know you are called to do. I always tell people, if you are not going to continue to do ministry, if right now I stop paying you, then go, then don't go into ministry. Because when you start, you want to be, as a young person, and a lot of the young pastors that, that I've worked in my life to mentor and to coach, they have so much passion. They have so many ideas. And unfortunately, if you don't let yourself to let God help you implement those ideas, which I believe a lot of them are God-given, they're not just your own, you know, imagination, you will end up hating ministry, because ministry will become boring. And that has happened to so many pastors. We're losing a lot of our creative pastors because, again, of the expectations that the church puts on them. You're there to visit me, to take care of me, to preach to me, whatever, but give Bible studies to everyone around me instead of really doing what God has called you to do. And of course, probably the other most important thing is you can't please everyone. You work for God, not for people. That's and if big. Someone doesn't like you, it's okay. It's hard too, because, and I, this is not, I don't know the official statistics, but I would say that majority of pastors like, you know, admiration, and they like being affirmed. And, you know, so when no one tells you, hey, this was a great sermon, or no one, and you hear only usually the criticism, it hurts, you know, and it hits you. So remember who God made you, and just don't let other people define who you are. You just keep going. And if people don't like you, it's okay. They'll find another pastor, another church. But don't be arrogant as well. Learn and grow. So there are a lot of things. I don't know if I've learned all of them anyway. So.
No, it's hard. I think even with the people pleasing, especially in with pastors and churches, there's a lot of, I think there's a market for everybody, because I think there's some people's styles are just different and some people like certain styles. And so there's a lot of times where people feel like they're not getting the style that they need. And so they just shut down church altogether because they're like, oh, well, this is what church is. I don't like it. But church can have so many different styles that maybe they just haven't found the right one yet.
And this is where I need to remember, my style might not connect with everyone as much as I want it to, you know, to be like the best pastor, whatever. It's I mean, teachers. Did I connect with all my teachers? They were all good people. I'm sure they had their, most of them, the majority of them had their heart in the right place. But I have two or three teachers that I really like too, because I connected to them. One of them was in physics. I'm not even in physics, okay? But it's just the, she was an amazing teacher, you know? So I think it's the same as pastors. By the way, this is why I believe in church planting so much, because it helps to create, not we can never have enough churches, okay? Because each church has its own personality, its own way of connecting with people. It allows to have different styles, different formats, different personalities, you know, the people that are there, the different people groups. So sometimes we feel threatened when we hear, oh, another church started, half of our people are going to go there. Well, church is a place, a community where I need to connect with God and with the people around me so I can keep growing spiritually. We can disciple each other. So if people find another place where they connect with God, praise God. Yes, I want them to be in my church, but as long as they're connecting with God, who cares? If it's not my kingdom, is what I like saying, but it's my kingdom. I mean, it's God's kingdom, you know, so I'm just a little part of it. But it's so hard because when someone leaves, especially when you're church planting and someone you see, well, they don't like what you did, or maybe you just didn't express it correctly, whatever. It's like, oh man, you know, what's wrong with me? Why am I not, you know, it's, you really have to kind of put your ego aside and let God lead. But yeah, it's a
I'm glad you said that because I was going to ask about it, but I just forgot about when it comes to church planting. I know there's a lot of, like, for, at Andrews, let's say, there's, I think, 5 different churches on the same campus. Like, we're all within a 2-minute walk. And so even in other places where it's like there's so many different churches in the same 10-minute radius of a city, and we're like, if there's another church that's being planted, we're like, well, why?
Yeah, so it depends why you plant it. So you always have to ask yourself, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. If I'm doing this because I don't like Celeste, I can't stand her, okay? I mean, you know, let's say you have a member, I don't like the pastor, or I don't like how good they do worship, I can do it better, but no one invites me. Well, maybe there is a reason why they're not inviting you, right? Because again, I mean, if you do it for your own sake, I want to just do it better, kind of to show you how much better I am, then don't do it. Church planting is all about discipleship, connecting new people with Jesus, and maybe helping yourself have a better environment to connect with Jesus. As long as it's done for that purpose, I don't mind having 100 churches within 10-mile radius. Yeah. Because again, statistically, 2 churches will grow faster than 1 church of an equal size, just because of the simple fact that they offer 2 different type of personality of churches, you know, and more people can connect. So it's the same thing with small groups. Why do churches that have small groups grow? Because you have all these small, I might not relate to the overall worship, you know, the same way or be as satisfied, but I have the group that I connect with. And so the more of these groups you have, the faster you grow. Statistically, it works out better as well. Yeah.
Wow.
We need to stop looking at church planting as a threat, because then we'll stop growing. Yeah. So
that's really good. Cause like I said, even with those, 5 different churches at Andrews, they're all so, so different. Like they're not, they're very different vibes. One of them's more contemporary. One of them's more conservative. One of them's, there's just so many different types. And so, like I said, there's a market for everybody.
And I guarantee you, if you close 2 or 3 of these churches, you will have probably 2/3 of the people who go to them will not go to any of the others. Okay. So what have you gained? Sometimes you say, oh, let's all come together. It's good to be, you know, once in a while to have these big assemblies, because again, I mean, we need to learn with each other's kind of differences, respect each other. But also, unfortunately, it always happens. The moment you close, you combine churches, you're going to lose people as well, because they just don't connect. There is a reason why some people are not at church, not because church is bad, but it's like a language. My favorite illustration is start speaking to people in Bulgarian when I talk to them about church planting. And I'll make this beautiful appeal for, hey, why don't you give your life to Jesus, you know, and all that, you know, in Bulgarian, okay? And they'll be looking at me like, what are you talking? And, you know, like, and I'm like, man, you guys must not like Jesus. No one is responding. Why are you so stubborn? You know, why didn't you respond to my appeal? I'm speaking a different language, right? So each church, even when we speak English, has a different language, different appeal. So sometimes I just don't connect. It's not the people. We say, well, people don't want to be in church. No, sometimes just they haven't found the right environment as well. So it's very important. And and I'm glad that more and more conferences, you know, I'm in the Potomac Conference here on the East Coast. And I know when I was in Texas, it was the same thing. There are conferences that believe in this, this multiplication, because they see the benefit. And those are the conferences that grow. because again, it's just the way God created us.
Yeah.
To be so.
That's good. I think this is the last thing I'll say, but that's a really good perspective, because I listened to a interview from Brandon Lake. I don't know if you've heard of him. Mm-hmm. He's a singer.
Yeah.
And he was saying how for him, he avoids using some of the fancy churchy language, like saying, holy, holy, holy. Well, you have to appeal to the people that you're trying to appeal to. So like, if you're trying to appeal to someone that's never been to a church before and doesn't know what these words mean, singing a song like that, they're not going to know what you're talking about. So yeah, it's like singing in a different language.
Absolutely. Yeah. You also have to, I mean, you know, holy, holy, holy. If you've been at church and you've left church and you come back, some people associate that with, I'm back with God now. It's very interesting how we are created, you know. So there is room for that.
Yeah.
But you are never going to reach people who just don't connect to that church language. So, you know, it's not either or, it's both done for the right reason.
Very true.
So,
yeah. I think that's good. This was really good conversation for me. I feel like this, your perspective is very fresh, and I don't see a lot of other pastors. Maybe I'm just talking to the wrong pastors and the wrong ministry leaders.
There are quite a few of them, out there.
Yeah.
So, but
it's a really good perspective to have, and not to, you know, have your mind closed on AI and technology, and just to open your mind on what it can even do and to be open to it.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad for what you guys do too,
because
like I mentioned to you initially, like even the way like participating in like, you know, podcasts and all that, you know, stuff that I'm trying to get involved in. It's different compared to the TV type of presentations we used to record when I started ministry, you know, and I find this type of an environment, like a conversation, you know, a lot more powerful than watching a TV program on, you know, how to be a pastor or somebody's story, whatever. So really glad for what you do, because I've watched your podcast as well, and they're very interesting. The conversations. So hopefully this is been interesting and benefits people.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah.
I hope next time we talk, both of our little things will be in a different place where they are now and moved further ahead.
And I would like to do an interview with you once we start our podcast to see our perspective on some of the issues that we are going to be.
Oh man, I'm not used to that. I'm used to being the one asking questions.
I know. It's okay. They will give me a chance to speak less and listen more. So
that's funny. That's good. Well, thank you for your time. And
you're welcome. And success with your everything that you do as well.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much for watching to the end of this episode. It's a pretty long one, so I don't know if either you fell asleep or you actually enjoyed the conversation. Either way, you're watching this part right now. So thank you for watching. If you did enjoy this episode, we encourage you to support this podcast so that we can keep making more episodes just like this one by subscribing, leaving a review, commenting, rating the video, and sharing it to the people that you think might like it. This podcast is powered by Virtual Staff Network, where we build tools to help make ministry life more efficient. Check us out at virtualstaffnetwork.com. Thank you again for watching.